every Thursday morning, Keith Klein rides shotgun.
Hey.
You can blame him for the lack of sunshine today, but I'll take full credit for the temperature. Moving up to 50 eventually today, but we'll have more thunderstorms tonight and then rain all day Friday and Saturday as well. Updated forecast at WGCLradio.com. And every Thursday morning, we check in with the city of Bloomington. The deputy mayor is our good friend, Mick Renheisen. Mick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Glass. Good morning, Keith.
Hey.
The large cat is on the prowl at the Palm Beach National, PGA National down there in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. He started on the back nine, made a birdie on 11, then hit an ice cream vendor on 12, Mick. So we'll have to put our seatbelt on and enjoy the ride with Tiger Woods at the Honda Classic, the golf switching coast from the West Coast, or we call it Mixed Coast, over to the Florida coast for a couple events here, three of the next four. So we'll keep an eye on Large Tiger. Not a lot of golf to play here because of the weather. Blame Keith for that.
Well, thank you.
In any way we can help Keith keep his name in the papers, we will. Now, Mick, we know it's been a busy time. It started last Thursday evening after we spoke to you. It was the state of the city. Let's just go through the timeline here to make sure everybody's up to date. Mayor John Hamilton was at the Buskirk Chumley Theater for the presentation along with the city council. It was a meeting because when you have that many people together, you have to call it a meeting. And there was some pushback, some protests. What are you officially calling this here about the Elenco Bearcat? Well, no, that name is not going to be forgotten in the history of this city.
Well, that's right. So we obviously didn't get a chance to deliver the mayor's State of the City address as planned that night due to the protests by people who were concerned about the purchase of an armored vehicle for the police department. And the mayor was trying to indicate at the beginning of his speech, something I want to reiterate to you and our listeners, you know, we didn't do a very good job of being transparent and open about the purchase of this vehicle back when it was being considered. In retrospect, we should have anticipated that there was going to be some discussion and potential pushback for this. You know, you just have to watch national news scenes to kind of appreciate why. And we own that. And what we're trying to do now is something we probably should have done back in a year ago when the discussion about moving a line item purchase from one item to another was being considered by the police chief and then by the administration. So all of us in the decision-making chain associated with that at the city, that being the police chief and the administration, admit that this wasn't handled in the way that we wished and should have done it. So having said that, we're trying now to listen and consider all sides of the discussion before the mayor makes a final determination about whether or not to go forward with the purchase of this armored vehicle for the police. I think you all have some questions for me, and I'm happy to continue to go forward, but I'll let you dive in, and there's a lot to unpack with this, so I'll wait for some of your questions, and we'll go from there.
And I think the first one will be, this is a procedural thing, it sounds like. What I mean by that is the police chief comes to the city council with a budget and says, I need 400, 800, 200 pesos to buy stuff. And if you don't ask what that stuff is, something like this could happen. Is that the true issue of all this? That I don't want to say it snuck through the cracks, but nobody really dove into the details of each line item of the budget. Is that part of this deal?
It's a part of it, but that's a great question. One of the things that's a little unusual is the public safety local income tax that was initiated 2 years ago in 2016 created new funding for our public safety entities in the city, the county, and the townships. And since that's a new funding source and there's a new process for how funds are allocated and it's an entirely separate kind of budget that folds into the approval processes for the county and the city, it's been a little, it's new, and we're adjusting to that. We put together, with the help of our public safety folks, a five-year capital plan for how those funds might be utilized. And in it, it shows a year and the planned potential purchase. So, you know, vehicles for both entities, fire trucks for the fire department, the police station and fire station upgrades and repairs, communications equipment, all those things are identified, some sort of generically, like, we need 33 police cars and we need to replace 11 a year because of the amount of mileage they drive. And then there was the standalone Bearcat that was in the 2019 line for the public safety lit capital plan. Now, I'll say this to make it the way I think of things, try to simplify city budgeting processes. When I tell people how complex it can be, I always try to relate it to your own home budget. If you were planning on buying a car next year in 2019, but your car broke in 2018, are you going to move your car purchase up and change something in your budget? The answer is yes. You only have to get that approval from whomever in your household makes those decisions about your finances. In the city's case, we make those dynamic decisions all the time. You make a budget, it's a plan, you stick to it as much as you can, but real life happens, things break, things change, project that you had budgeted for comes in over budget, you review the project, you decide I don't want to do that after all, doesn't make sense, and you shift those resources. We don't have to and have not made a practice of going back to city council for any of those things. That's what the administration, each of our department heads, is authorized to do. Having said that, and this was in the lit budget part, this purchase of that equipment, having said that, we still think we should have been more transparent about it simply because of the nature of the controversy that has obviously emerged. We should have said, this is unique. Let's talk about it. Let's have these public discussions. Let's explain to people what it is and what it isn't, because there are perceptions of what it is that are not accurately depicted, but that's on us. If we'd have done what we're about to do next week with public sessions and explanations and listening to people's concerns, we probably wouldn't be going through this now.
Well, the only other side of that coin is, where do the public get these concerns from? Just because it's happening in another city, where is the evidence here in Bloomington that we've had issues with this before? And what is the outrage from that you've gotten in feedback? Is the outrage about the machine? Is the outrage about the process? Is it a little bit of everything? Because the old trucks, the old CIRT, no one complained really about those. How did we get here?
Well, the national dialogue has changed, and I'm not blaming it solely on that, but certainly as you see events that have been highlighted in this discussion in Ferguson and other places, you know, you see a vehicle, you think it's the same thing because the Lenco Bearcat's kind of like saying, I'm going to buy a Ford Explorer. You can get your Ford Explorer with a lot of different features. It doesn't mean every Ford Explorer is the same, nor is every Lenco Bearcat, but I get it. It's you watch the national news, you see a police law enforcement agency in another part of the country maybe use it in a way we would never use here and never have used it here.
That's kind of where I was going with that.
And it fairly agitates people because of the potential for that happening. I'd like to think that our track record has indicated in the past we haven't done that, so speculating that we would is just
yeah, that's
that
a leap is interesting. That I never understood that leap.
However, we have to be respectful that you know, the dialogue about this around the country and the tenor and the way people are not having discussions, they're having arguments and shout-downs, and you know, no one's listening to each other, and so we're trying our best here now to listen, process, inform, and dialogue and interact with people who have concerns. That's fair, that's legitimate, and that's what our plan is to do moving forward. The City Council did that Tuesday. They started that process. We took the questions from the Tuesday night session. We'll be giving responses to the City Council members so they can respond to everybody who came. We're having two sessions next week on Tuesday, February 27th. The Board of Public Safety will meet from 5 to 6:30 to listen and hear about some of the comments about the potential purchase. And then after that, we're going to have what we did with annexation is open house format, where we'll have stations where our law enforcement staff will be there, and the stations will show the vehicle and what the specs are that are on it and let people see it and ask questions about it. And then they'll talk about policy at another station, and then the public that comes can leave their comments at another station. So we record everything in a way that we get the same thing. We want to try to get feedback, and so we can answer people's questions and concerns. Then we'll repeat that Thursday, March 1st, same process at a different time from noon to 2. So one in the evening on Tuesday, one during the day on Thursday, same kind of a format to get all this, the questions and answers and concerns expressed. And from there, because spring break week is coming and it's nobody's here, right? So it's not a good time to be announcing or making any decisions about what we'll do next. We're going to wait till the week after spring break to process all the input we have, and then the mayor will make his final decision about whether to go forward with the planned purchase or not.
Mick, let me take you back on something you just said, because I'm confused about what you said and what I read in the paper. The paper indicated that the money that was used for this purchase had been approved for another use. You mentioned that already. They were going to do some roof repairs or something at the police station, and the bid came in much higher than the money that was set aside for it. So then they essentially said, well, we'll take the money and invest it in this vehicle. And the way you just explained, that's something that is kind of routine. And is that the transparency you're talking about, that even though all of this that happened is within the realm of other things that go on in the city, the transparency was that we didn't say this money that was going to be for the roof is now for the vehicle?
Well, I think because of the nature of the vehicle that we're planning on purchasing or planning on purchased, we should have anticipated this, and because the public safety lit budget is not the process that it goes through, doesn't have the same kind of direct oversight of the, that's not a good way to say it. My point is it's a little different. The mm-hmm. city council and the general fund budget and other budgets go through the city council process. It would not have been really apparent to the city council during those budgets when we were talking in August about the planned purchases for them to see that August of 2017 or any other August, because the PS lit budget has that separate function and has different approval processes. It was in there, mind you, but it did get moved forward because of the reason that you said, Keith, that there was okay. something else that was budgeted, and it became apparent we didn't need, or it was too expensive in this case, for it was a garage and some basement repairs at the police station. We found another way to address a storage concern for them, and so it was like, let's not spend the money there. The chief asked to repurpose it for this Lenco vehicle, and that's when we should have said, okay, but we probably ought to have a public discussion about that because of the nature of the vehicle and what's going on in the world. That's where we missed the opportunity to get it out there and do what we're doing now.
And I don't want it to get lost in this, but and it wasn't at the meeting the other night, as the some of the wives from the CIR, we call it CERT, is that how we say mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, Critical Incident Response Team.
Yeah, yep. Wives from CERT said, hey, look, our husband's going to some pretty tough situations here. It'd be nice to have something that's not 20 years old and was not designed in the first place for this stuff. You know, everybody poo-poos first responders till they need one at their house.
Well, that's fair. And, you know, these are things that you hope you never see. I've said this as long as I've been in public service. We pay a lot for public safety, and it's the number one priority of any part of government, you know, whether it's nationally, state, or local. And you hope you never have to see them. You hope they never have to come to your house to put out a fire. You hope you never have to have a police officer come to resolve any incident at your house. But you sure want them when they're there. That's a very good point. In this case, and because of the national issues that we've seen, and we've had local issues where we've had to put our officers in harm's way. They've been fired upon to go save or potentially save a victim of a situation where there's an armed person holding someone hostage or what have you. And if we can't get our officers safely to that person, we can't do our job. And that's what this vehicle really is. It is a defensive vehicle. It's armored. When you see pictures of it next week, when people see them, it's going to look like a box van on the inside. It transports people safely to a scene so that they don't get shot, so they can do their job. And again, we don't use this a ton of times. I hope we don't have to use it at all, but we have had to in the past. And when we can't get safely to the scene, we can't do our job.
Amen.
We can't protect our officers. We can't protect you. That's kind of a fundamental part of public safety. So I'm not trying to diminish the arguments about the way we've done this. I'm just simply saying that's the overarching reason that we pursued the purchase of this vehicle and still think at this moment that it's necessary, unfortunately, because of the incidents that we have had to defuse in the past, and we don't anticipate that changing. Wished it would happen that way, but we can't assume that's going to be the case.
Mick, some of the first vehicles to arrive in the Florida school shooting were these kinds of vehicles to try to assist and help the students, not knowing what the whole situation was, but to have the ability to get the police officers closer to where things were happening. And, you know, as a school board member, I want to have that ability.
Right, that's a terrible situation, Keith. I hope we never see it here. It's terrible what happened in Parkland and Sandy Hook and Columbine.
We don't have enough time to list them all.
No, and it's sad. It's sad, and that's a whole other topic of discussion about how that continues to be to happen. However, you're right that you did see vehicles like ours, not exactly like ours, outfitted. One of those was a little bit more offensive than defensive in the pictures that people look at. You can go to the website of the Lenco company and see all kinds of different things, that some do look more militaristic than others and can be outfitted that way. Ours
armored is,
not that. Is
different than armed. Everybody
that is,
should,
that
needs
is right.
to learn a couple things. Mick, I don't mean to cut you short. This is a great discussion. Give us a little trivia before we get going, and we'll pick this up next Thursday as this process continues. We're running out of time here, sadly.
Yeah, that'd be great. Morning. I appreciate that. Thanks for the opportunity.
No, thank you for the opportunity. We need the details. The devil is always in the details, and when we can get that information, this is why we record these interviews and put them on our website, because they're fantastic.
Thanks for doing that, guys. I appreciate it. All right, trivia day. City Parks and Recreation will be conducting a spring cleanup of our Rose Hill and White Oak Cemetery starting the week of March 12th. The annual cleanup includes removing and disposing of flower arrangements, damaged or faded flags, and broken decorations. We have decoration policies at both cemeteries. They prohibit the use of what type of containers? Is it A, plastic, B, glass, C, metal, or D, holiday decorations? Which one of those can you not, or we prefer you not, use when you decorate your loved one's cemetery stones?
I'm guessing glass.
That's what I'm going to... holiday decorations popped in there. Glass breaks and cause... Yeah. I'm going with glass.
Yeah, it is glass, and it's for that reason, because if they shatter, then mm-hmm. we mow and trim, and it's just extra maintenance, and there's a lot of grave sites to maintain in those two cemeteries. Next question. A special memorial was dedicated in the White Oak Cemetery in November 1989. Whose lives does the memorial commemorate? Is it A, early settlers who were buried in the small cemeteries that were later lost or destroyed? Is it B, local veterans of foreign wars? C, local athletes who competed in the Olympics, or D, victims of the Buddy Holly plane crash?
I'm going to say early settlers.
I will agree with Keith.
That's exactly right. Early settlers who were buried in small cemeteries that were later lost or destroyed, which unfortunately happens over time. Those stones turn over, get buried, and you can't see
right.
anymore any that they even existed. And your final question,
it's like
of the
modern
day
archaeology.
You guys are 2 for 2. Which of these men is not, I say not, buried in Rose Hill Cemetery? Is it A, researcher Alfred Kinsey? Is it B, author Ross Lockridge? Is it C, songwriter Hoagie Carmichael? Or is it D, musician Lotus Dickey, who was not buried in Rose Hill Cemetery?
I am going to plead ignorance on this one. I do not know.
I might say Lotus Dickey because I don't believe he was from Bloomington.
Keith, you are 3-0 today. Congratulations.
Wow. Leather jacket, Keith.
All right.
And
I feel
just
smart.
So everybody in our community knows, Alfred Kinsey, Ross Lockridge, and Hoagie Carmichael are all buried in the Rose Hill Cemetery.
Well, you learn something every day with Mick Renheisen on this program, or every Thursday. Mick, great job. We appreciate the insight, and we'll continue this discussion just as the city will.
Yeah, thanks for talking.
Yeah,
that's
great
important.
Job. Great job.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mick.
Thanks.
Mick Renheisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. We could go for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on this, and good job by the city of being...
I like the openness, and Mick never pulls any punches.
It is good openness, and it just sends a message as well that if you trust the government mm-hmm. to do what they can do, that's fine. But you can also dig a little bit deeper if you'd like some answers to see what's happening as well. Mick will continue with us this discussion throughout the process, and we'll see. There's no roadmap for this. This is not right. something they've done before, so we're learning along with everybody else.